We are moving through the story of the Exodus. And we understand this story is really our story. It's the story of Israel. It's a group of people learning to walk in the new life. And so last week we talked about the plagues and what the plagues meant for Israel. We understand that those plagues actually meant something really deep for those ancient people. And so they move and they walk into the wild, chaotic waters. And what happens to the waters? Good. Three of us have watched Prince of Egypt. Yeah. They part. And the idea here is they go through the chaos. They go through the chaos. And there they find life on the other side. They're about to walk in the desert. They're going to go unlearn and learn certain things. And so it's interesting, their enemies are covered in the water, in the chaos, they step out. But there's this interesting moment, right after they step out, we're told there's this interesting verse that I never picked up before. It goes like this: "You will bring them and plant them in your own mountain, the place you dwell." Now for us, we read that in our culture today and we think that's a nice verse. Puts us on a mountaintop, sounds beautiful. But when you look at the context and the history behind this, what this meant for those people, there's something actually really deep. I had a friend the other day. We were talking about how to view the Bible. And I asked him, when's the last time you read Shakespeare? He said, I don't read Shakespeare. I don't read it. Yeah, last time I looked at it was high school. And I said, why not? He said, I can't read it. It doesn't make sense to me. I need a commentary. I need all this other stuff to try to figure it out. Because for Shakespeare, when he said the word pregnant, it didn't mean pregnant, it meant something premature that would happen. And so you have all these words that don't quite make sense unless you dig deep. Now, Shakespeare was around 350, 400 years ago. The Bible was written 2,000 plus years ago. It's so important to look at the history and the context, and when you do, beautiful truths open up. And so this word, this phrase, the mountain, the word here is nalatka. And this word means the sacred place of Baal. Isn't that interesting? So think about this. You will bring them and plant them on your place of worship of Baal? What do we do with this? This sounds kind of interesting. It seems kind of odd. Here's the beauty of your story and my story and the Israelite story. When you start the new journey, there is a reclaiming that happens. See, Israelite knew the God of Baal is the God that brings chaos and brokenness. But what the idea here is really fascinating. Our God replaces Baal, pushes Baal off the mountain. Our God brings life and order to the chaos. And so whatever moment you're in your life, when you start that new journey, you're going to be replacing things. Some things will move and shift. And God will step in and bring order to your chaos. There will be a replacement. Where Baal once stood, now Israel's God stands. Where there was once chaos and brokenness, order and life is there. Oh, isn't that good? So I have a movie that I like. How many of you ever watched Shawshank Redemption? Oh, it's a beautiful movie. And in the movie, there's a character named Andy. And Andy gets put in Shawshank Prison. He is convicted of murder, yet we understand later on he didn't actually commit the murder. And Andy is put in Shawshank. And Andy is there, he's supposed to be there for his entire life, serving out this life sentence. Now, the narrator, Red, he describes Andy in some interesting ways. He says, Andy didn't belong. Everywhere Andy walked, he was just a different kind of walk. Everywhere he went, he saw things just a little bit differently. Red said he seemed to float amongst all of us. And the narrator watched as Andy, while he was there in the prison, he changed the prison from the inside out. He took this really drab place of brokenness and he created a library. He built up the library. He built up lives. He helped people pass tests in order to get their education. He did beautiful things there. Unbeknownst to most of them, Andy was digging a hole through the wall in the prison the entire time. And one night during a storm, Andy goes through the wall, steps down onto a pipe, and breaks the sewage pipe. He gets inside of the sewage pipe. I know, it's gross. And he wades through 5 football field lengths of sewage. And he comes out on the other side, and there is this beautiful spiritual moment where Andy is standing in the rain and the gunk is falling off of him, and he's free. He's escaped prison. And whenever I've watched this movie, I've always saw myself as Andy, just like all of you do. You see yourself in Andy's shoes. You're the hero. You never see yourself as the villain, right? But here's something fascinating I noticed about the movie the other day. I watched it again. I watch it every couple of years. Beautiful. What I noticed is Andy's not actually the main character in this. Andy is not the narrator. It's not coming from Andy's perspective. It's coming from Morgan Freeman, whose voice I think is what God's voice would sound like. He could narrate the Encyclopedia Britannica, and I would listen. Morgan Freeman narrates the story, and it's so powerful. Morgan Freeman is Red. Red is this African-American character who is put in prison because he murdered someone. He did murder someone. And Red watches Andy, and he's touched by Andy, and he grows because of Andy. Morgan's character is a really good prisoner. He's gotten really good at being a prisoner. He's the guy you go to when you need something. Red watched as Andy left, and Red felt loss. Over and over again, Red has gone to this panel of people every 5 to 10 years. They ask him, have you been reformed? He says yes, and they either stamp accepted or denied. He's been denied over and over and over again. After a time, and Andy's been gone for 5, 6 years, Red goes before the group again. This time, accept. And at a very old age, Freeman's character leaves prison. And he begins having to adopt or move himself back into culture again. Imagine being in prison for over 50 years and then going back into culture now. It's a shift. There's the statistic says 67% of prisoners who have been in prison long term, when they get out, they will commit a crime just in order to get back in. Because that's home. And so Morgan Freeman's character has a choice. Do I stay in this freedom and learn to walk in the newness? Or do I go back to Shawshank? And really, this is the story of Israel. And Israel is at this moment, they're walking now, they're about to begin this journey into the new thing. And the question is, will you stay in? Will you go back to prison, back to Egypt, or will you learn to fully be in the new thing and thrive? That's the question that they're given. And so Israel's going to face 4 different trials. 4 different trials that will test them whether they will stay or go. The first one looks like this. Exodus 15, 22 through 27. The Israelites are just beginning to move, walk around in the desert, and they run out of water. How many of you have ever been on a hike or a bike ride for a long extended period? You run out of water. I'm that guy that's been just taking water from everybody else because I ran out like 20 minutes into the drive. I'm just drinking water. You're out of water. Now it's beginning to get kind of serious. They run out of water. They get to a place called Marah, which is literally the word bitterness. In Marah, there's water there, but it's poisoned water. It's not drinkable water. How many of you, when you left that relationship, when you decided to stop that cycle you're in, when you walked away from something that was toxic, how many of you found yourselves feeling angry bitter. You wanted to hurt the people who hurt you. You wanted to drink bitter waters. Israel has a moment here where they can choose to continue drinking bitterness and anger, angst. Let that be what nourishes them and eventually let their souls die. Or they can drink from a different kind of well. And so the story goes, Moses sees this. And what Moses does next, he takes, like any of us would do if there's toxic water, we would take a bit of a tree and we'd throw it in the water. Seems reasonable. You don't need a filtration device, just throw in a piece of wood. Right? Of course, we understand there's more to the story, isn't there? Because the word for wood, the word for this piece of tree, is actually the word that means wisdom. And they understood as Hebrews, Torah is where wisdom is found. Even in Proverbs 3:18, they use this word for wisdom. She is a tree, same word, tree of life to those who take hold of her. Those who hold her fast will be blessed. And so, in those moments when you're trying to walk in the new life, you may be carrying around with you some bitterness, some anger. And again, please understand, I'm speaking to me more than anybody here. Someone may have done you wrong, said some things about you, whatever it is, and you want to hold on to that bitterness. If you hold on to that thing, it will destroy your soul. And that's where the wisdom tradition comes in. That's when we begin to lean on those who have experienced these things before. You went through a bitter divorce. Who should you talk to? People who have gone through a divorce. You're facing a crisis in your life. Talk to the people who have the wisdom, who have been there before. Begin allowing those voices, those Torah voices, to give you life again. Next crisis, Exodus 16, 1 through 20. They got some water. They're feeling good, but what else do you need besides water? You need some food. And so again, Israel, they run out of food. And they're saying to Moses, look, in Egypt, we had pots of meat. We were really well fed. You've taken us out of there, and now there's nothing to eat. There's nothing to sustain life. Moses hears them. He prays to God. The crowd is building. They're getting angry. When you walk in the new thing, in the new reality, sometimes we're tempted to go back. Sometimes the things that we thought used to bring us healing and sustain us, we'll oftentimes have a moment where we're tempted to go back. That relationship with that person, it ended for a reason, but you are so caught up in all of this stuff that you forget. And for a time, you think, maybe I just need to go back to it. Even though that cycle, that addiction, that thing brought you so much brokenness, maybe I need to go back to it. And some of us do. And when we do, we go right back into slavery. Some of us need to learn that maybe there needs to be a replacement. Maybe the things that used to sustain your life don't anymore. Stop going back. Before, you used to find a lot of joy in just building yourself up, your kingdom, at any cost. It doesn't matter if you hurt someone else. It's about building you up. But now you've left Egypt. You don't do that anymore. Now your joy is found in building others up. Building a different kind of place. A different kind of life. Israel has a moment where they could potentially go back to broken cycles. Repeat certain things. Moses prays to God. And what we're told is manna from heaven falls down. A new kind of food they begin to eat. And it's the kind of food, the kind of life that fills them completely. Another crisis they face. Exodus 17, 1 through 7. We're told that they run out of water again. And they end up in this place, Rephidim. And this word means an oasis. Imagine you have been traveling in the desert. Your feet are hot. You got no, very little food. You're kind of bored with manna, whatever that is. You're thirsty again. You get to the oasis, the thing that used to bring you so much life. You get there, and there's no water. And the trees are no longer offering shade. This oasis is a desert. It's become a curse to you. And you're frustrated, and your feet are blistering. They get there, and oftentimes in the middle of this kind of crisis, we will oftentimes blame God. This thing happened to me. It must have been God. But let me tell you this. I used to buy that. But I've learned lately that this life is a beautiful gift. And with that gift, there are good things and bad things that happen. Sometimes out of your control. Whether it is good or bad or whatever crisis you face, I'm learning, though, there is something to be learned in the middle of the crisis. For Moses, we're told God says, strike the rock. Break the outer crust of the rock. And when you do, water is going to spill forth. Again, I'm speaking to myself more than anybody. In the middle of my conflicts and crisis, I've begun to ask myself questions. What did you learn? What are you repeating? Here's a question for you. When you are angry or in the middle of crisis or conflict, how do you treat the grocer at Ralph's? If you find yourself like, come on, man, you gotta bag that. I said paper. I love the world. I just can't stand you. You're too slow. What comes out of you when you're in the middle of crisis? Most of us, if we are true to ourselves and we stop for a bit, if we ask ourselves some questions in the middle of the breaking, in the middle of the crisis, what have I learned? What am I repeating? There is something beautiful that will come forth from it. Beautiful waters. You become for other people. Beautiful, refreshing, life-sustaining water. And here's the beauty of this. In the Talmud, for the rabbis, they believe that this rock traveled with Israel everywhere they went. Isn't that kind of cool? Take it or leave it. I think it's interesting. Because here's the beauty. Wherever you go, that water of life will follow. I think there's something beautiful there. I think that preaches so good. The last conflict, 17, 8 through 16. How many of you have ever gotten through a crisis and you were feeling good? You're like, I'm walking on sunshine. And you're feeling like, nothing's going to stop me now. And you're doing your thing. Right when you begin to feel like you're hitting your stride. That was the electric stride slide. Right when you feel like you're getting it. You step on a piece of glass, and you're on crutches the rest of the week. Something will take place inevitably. There will be a conflict. There will be something that comes up. You will be attacked. You'll be attacked. For them, the Amalekites, they... When you hit your stride... They are attacked by this empire, this kingdom. When they finally feel like they're hitting their stride, they get attacked. And here's the interesting thing about in that moment when you're being attacked, in that moment where you felt like you were there and then, bah, someone hit you back in your place. You've been kicked and now you're down again. In that moment, here's the beautiful message for Israel and for you and I today. When you get kicked down, when you are mistreated, when certain things go the wrong way, Moses says, Yeshua, Joshua. By the way, that is the name of Jesus. Go forth, fight the battle for us. Lead us into a different kind of battle. And Moses goes on top of the mountain. He says, hold up my hands. Hold up my arms. And as long as my arms are held up, we'll win the battle. And Moses is there and he begins to get a little tired. And what takes place here is really fascinating. Because in the middle of that conflict, in the middle of that battle, it's not Moses' strength that wins the day. It's the community's strength. In the middle of your conflict, in the middle of your pain, in the middle of your brokenness, may you begin to rely on your community. Sometimes it means asking for help. A lot of us just assume people will know. They don't. Sometimes you have to ask for it. Sometimes you have to let people be aware, I need my arms held up right now. And I've seen over and over again, community stand up and hold the arms of those hurting, and battles are won. And where is God in all of this? Where is God in the midst of all of these crises? I think this story is kind of interesting. This is Justin Baldoni. He's an actor. And his kid, you're not going to believe this, but he has a kid that sometimes throws fits in the middle of public places. I know. Justin, his wife, was there at Whole Foods with Justin's dad. And she saw this take place right in the middle of Whole Foods. And their daughter just loses it. And she's there with the camera. And Justin and her father-in-law are just standing over her daughter. And they're looking at her. Some of you parents, you'd be like, oh. No, I take that back. Some of you who don't have kids, you're experts. You would look at this and you'd say, I would spank that kid. I would do this. I would do that. They see this going on. And this, she posts this picture online, and it went viral. Thousands and thousands of comments. Again, good advice given what I would do. And Justin, he posts a reply that was brilliant. He said, no, you don't understand. See, my father, when I would throw fits in public, my father understood it's not because I'm some evil, decrepit kid. It's that I am frustrated and I'm angry and I need to let this out. And so rather than spank me, beat me in public, take me out of there, and I'll tell you what to do. His father would sit or stand next to him and he'd do this. I know. This must be so frustrating. Try saying that without looking sarcastic. I'm trying. But he would stand over him and just be present. And after Justin got it all out, he kind of gathered himself, as any good four-year-old can do. And there was Dad, who would say, you okay, son? What happened? What did you learn? And Justin knew Dad is always going to be there. He's going to hug me. He's going to hold me. He understands what's going on. And I think this is the beauty of what Justin was showing his daughter. And this is the beauty of our God. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. Everything I have is yours. I've not left you. In the middle of your crisis, I'm there. And there's community, and there's love, and there's lessons, and there's all these things we can learn. You are not alone. Sometimes you got to let it out. And when you do, we are there to support you. for Red. Red chose not to go back to prison, not to go back to Shawshank. Red chose to continue walking in the new reality of freedom. And there on the beach, there's this beautiful scene where Red sees Andy for the first time in 10 years. And they hug. And there in that embrace, we see this boat, because he and Andy are going to begin sailing a new kind of ocean, a new kind of life. They're going to sail through the chaotic waters together. So my prayer for you is, whatever chaotic waters you find yourselves in on the new journey, whatever crises you experience, you might learn to drink from better waters. You might learn to allow other, more life-sustaining things to bring you life. You might choose not to go back to those cycles, but continue pushing on into the new. In the midst of it, you might learn to understand that community is here and loves you and supports you. We are here to lift each other up. And so my blessing I give you today is that you would learn to walk in the new reality that God has given us.